Hello everyone and welcome to the Smashy Business Show. Today is Thursday, May 8, 2025. I'm Abdul Majid Awan.
And I'm Wardat Ahmed, and we've got a great show for you today. Now, today we're discussing how, in a historic move, Disney is to open the first Middle East theme park in Abu Dhabi. Secondly, Qatar Airways is lining up a Boeing order in time for Trump's visit next week. And Meta has won a $168 million verdict against Israeli spyware firm NSO Group. And finally, Tabby and Kitopi are weighing possible IPO plans.
Let's start with the biggest and the classiest and the coolest story of the day. The Walt Disney Company has confirmed it will open its first ever theme park and resort in the Middle East, located on Yas Island in Abu Dhabi. The project will mark Disney's seventh global resort with a theme park and multiple hotels planned as part of the new development.
Significantly, Disney will not fund the construction of the resort. The entire project will be financed and developed by Abu Dhabi's Miral Group. Now, Disney will provide the creative direction through its Imagineering team and will earn royalties once the resort opens, expected in the early 2030s.
The business model reflects Disney's global strategy to expand its footprint without overextending capital. CEO Bob Iger told CNBC, the process typically takes 2 years for design and 5 years for construction. Following the announcement, Disney's stock jumped 10% on Wednesday, boosted by also strong Q2 earnings and investor confidence in international growth.
Now, Disney's experiences segment, which includes parks and resorts, remains the company's strongest performer. In 2024, it contributed 37% of total revenue and generated 60% of Disney's operating income, making international expansion a top priority amid tighter streaming margins.
Also, Abu Dhabi offers a strategic location with over 500 million people within flying distance, including key markets like India. The new resort will join existing Yas Island attractions such as SeaWorld and Warner Brothers and Ferrari World, positioning the capital as a major global theme park.
Now, Disney says the Abu Dhabi resort will be its most advanced, yet blending regional culture with state-of-the-art technology. So basically what they're trying to do is they're going to make sure that it's Emirati themed. Now, yeah. A futuristic castle and immersive storytelling powered by Unreal Engine will reflect both Disney's innovation and the UAE's modern identity. Now, more development details are expected in the coming months. It's going to be really interesting to see. You never know. They might just give us an Emirati Disney princess just in time for the opening. Yeah. They really might. But, you know, just on the topic of Miral, the company that's actually going to be in charge of constructing everything, you know, they truly are very trusted because, guys, they are who have given us Ferrari World. Yeah. I believe also Yas Water World, Warner Bros. So they, you know, when a company has shown success in the past, you know that in the future, what will follow will be even greater. So I think for me, I'm excited to see what they do with Disneyland.
There's a very interesting story that my wife told me yesterday. There's a page, there's an Emirati influencer who runs an Instagram page, and he's very famous for announcing things before being announced. And he actually posted this story 3 weeks ago that there is a Disneyland coming.
Oh, they definitely all knew. I saw Chris Waite's stories.
Then eventually he deleted that part of the story, and then finally we saw this. So yeah, a lot of people knew about it, but it was like an inside story. Now finally it has been unveiled. Everyone is talking about it. The whole LinkedIn is full of everyone saying how impactful it will be for Abu Dhabi, because whenever we talk about some big attraction, we talk about Dubai, and it's kind of like the tourist hub, and it has been the tourist hub for the past decade. But Abu Dhabi is at par now, and with the Sphere coming from Las Vegas, the first Sphere is in Las Vegas, the second ever location, Abu Dhabi. Disney, after nearly, 15 years, they're opening a new resort and land, Disneyland. And they choose Abu Dhabi. So Abu Dhabi's Yas Island, I think, is becoming the prime property right now. If you buy a house, by the time it's 2030, you'll get a lot of return because everyone will be going there. They'll need spaces to live. I remember there's this seven hotel complex in Abu Dhabi on Yas Island. And we did a story back in August last year that one of the hotel groups, I think it's Hilton or IHG, they're buying all those seven and they're combining them into one combined resort as well. So people have already started planning things because they know there's so much coming. So everything is... So with Ras Al Khaimah's casino...
Win Al Marjan.
Yeah, Win Al Marjan. And then Abu Dhabi bringing so many attractions. I think Dubai somewhere in between is like, okay,
you know,
what's happening?
You know what,
we
you
need
know
to come
I
up
would,
with something new as well.
You know what I think it is really magic? You know, you have Dubai, they have the Burj Khalifa, and they have the Dubai viral chocolate. Yeah. I would say that Dubai is, I feel like it is distinguished for good food, by the way. A lot of people tell me that Dubai has very good food. And now we're seeing that rack, it's becoming this location where people want to go for holidays, where, you know, Win Al Marjan is soon going to be, as you said. And then Abu Dhabi is almost going to be the place where people go, you know, not just for resorts, but for things like concerts, Disneyland. So it's going to be interesting to see how this is going to be in the future. But I feel like the reason why this topic, it's so big, it's so historic, it's because Disney is so close to so many people's hearts, not just children, but adults as well.
It goes beyond generation. It's not like a Gen Z thing or a millennial thing or like Gen, I don't know, X, Y thing. Every person in the world who is alive right
loves
now
loves Disney.
Loves
You're not
Disney,
normal
has
if you
a connection
like it.
To some prince, princess, some story at least. So it's going to be very interesting. Talking about Miral, very important to talk about. Then she told you about the portfolio, but SeaWorld Yas Island, the biggest SeaWorld in the world after US, Miral built that. I love SeaWorld, by the way. If you've never been to it, just try to go when there is a discount. I think summers are coming, you'll get the price discounted. Usually it's $450. But the good idea is buy a one-day hotel, any of the hotels on Yas Island, and they give you one park for free.
Oh,
so it's
wow.
usually, you can go to Ferrari World, Warner Brothers, or SeaWorld, one of them, for free with one-day stay. So good idea. Apart from that, Etihad Arena is under Miral. Climb Yas Island is under Miral. Warner Brothers, as Word said, Ferrari World, them, Yas Marina, them, Yas Water World. Their whole website has the whole long list. You can see it yourself as well. So, yeah, they have a very, very long history of giving us such great attractions. And this is the next big attraction. But we'll have to wait a lot. Most probably by 2031, it will happen. It's not going to be like next year or 2 years. We will have to wait a little. So, yeah. Keep waiting.
But it's like also with, you know, just the subject of Disneyland Magic, you know, Bob Iger, the CEO, the renowned CEO of Disneyland, was here and he was with the Crown Prince of Abu Dhabi, Khalid bin Mohammed bin Zayed, to witness the entire announcement. Yeah. Chris Fade and his children were also there, so they probably knew. But, you know, my point was with all of that is I feel like for the longest time ever, we as individuals determined where the most important places in the world were, depending on where Disney was, because Disney is in the U.S.
Yeah.
I believe there is a Disney.
People love to go to the Disneyland.
Disney,
in
the US, there's one in the U. There's a bunch in the U.S., California, I believe, and then Florida, and then there's also one in France. Was it Tokyo? I don't remember. There was one in Asia, but I remember
so they
that
say it's seven, right? And this is the seventh, or they already have seven.
I'm not sure about that, but you know, from what I feel is that where Disneyland opens, that's where you know it's a prime location, not, you know, on the earth. Not just in a continent in the Middle East, but really on the earth. So I think this really distinguishes the UAE more than we'll ever know.
And
you
the
know,
tourism influx, a lot of money is coming in terms of tourism. So yeah, she was right. California, Florida, then Tokyo, Paris,
Tokyo.
Yes, and Hong Kong, Shanghai. These are the six locations, and now Abu Dhabi will be added.
And you know,
Majid,
I remember I was speaking to Abdullah, and he was asking me about Disneyland, and I was telling him how I went to the one in France. And he was saying, you know, when his kids are like more aware, he plans to take them to Disneyland.
Yeah.
So, you know, that this is a place that many people
now you don't
work
have to
hard
go somewhere.
For, dream exactly, work hard for, dream of, and you know. This is why, you know, everyone works really hard at work to go to locations like this. So I think that's why it's really big.
And the good thing about the, just a little about Disney's numbers also, that they added 2.5 million subscribers in the last quarter. That's great. And experiences, all these things, Disneylands and experiences, it was like 37% of their revenues. And their stock prices jumped 10% also. So it's not only Abu Dhabi benefiting from this deal. Disney got a lot out of it as well because the numbers were great. And then now, they're so smart with this. With their great numbers report, they already saw the numbers, the new. They attached the Abu Dhabi thing. And now their market price and the share price skyrocketed. So imagine if it was going to be 5 or 6%, they were like, add more, compound the benefit that we get from this. So really good, great move from both sides. Let's see, hopefully, as soon as it starts constructing, towards till it's constructed, it's going to be a story nearly every month that, oh, first floor, oh, the ground has been dug.
Oh, we finally like have, have a reveal date. It's going to open this year.
Yeah.
Definitely.
So there's going to be a lot of stuff coming out. We'll keep you
there
updated
is.
On it.
And speaking of a lot of stuff coming out, I know that there is a lot coming out about this story, but it's Donald Trump. What can we do? So Qatar Airways is preparing to announce a major aircraft deal with Boeing during U.S. President Donald Trump's upcoming visit to the Gulf region next week. Now, according to Bloomberg, the state-owned carrier is planning to order around 100 wide-body jets with an option for 100 more in what could be one of the largest aviation deals in recent memory.
And the announcement is expected during Trump's visit to Qatar, Saudi Arabia, and UAE from May 13 to 16. Yesterday in a press conference, he was saying that we'll fly out on Monday night. So most probably 12th May, he'll fly out. And as soon as he lands here, it'll be May 13. And the trip is set to feature a series of corporate agreements across defense, infrastructure, emerging technologies, name it. Bloomberg reports that total deals signed during the visit may reach as high as $3 trillion, surpassing the value of Trump's 2017 Gulf tour.
Now in Saudi Arabia, Riyadh Air, backed by the Public Investment Fund, is also set to be weighing an order of up to 50 wide-body aircrafts. Now, however, unlike Qatar Airways, Riyadh Air may opt for Airbus's, Boeing's European competitor, as it expands its fleet ahead of a planned launch.
And President Trump has called on Saudi Arabia to boost U.S. trade and investment to $1 trillion, following a $600 billion commitment previously made by His Royal Highness Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman. The UAE, meanwhile, already has announced $1.4 trillion in the U.S. In terms of investments over the next 10 years, with a focus on AI, semiconductors, and clean energy.
Now, analysts say aviation deals will be closely watched as signals of U.S. Gulf economic ties under Trump's leadership. Now, the high-profile Boeing order could also offer a significant boost to the U.S. manufacturing sector as the aerospace giant continues to face delivery delays and global competition. Now, with Donald Trump, Majid, I really feel he is one of those people who, if you looked at him and said, the world does not revolve around you, that statement would be completely untrue.
Yeah,
it really would be.
The world is right now revolving around him.
Right now, it does revolve around him. I think what we're witnessing, by the way, it's historical.
Yeah.
It won't be until another 4 years until another U.S. president is elected. So
and
I feel...
I don't think anyone has ever made Gulf so important, the Middle East so important, as he has. Even with the tariffs, you see, the minimum was...
10%.
What was put on Middle Eastern superpowers. Jordan got the wrong end of the stick, but at least UAE, Saudi, all the other ones, they were just at the minimum 10% because he had to, like,
poor
do tariffs
Jordan
to everyone.
At 40%.
So we're getting preferential treatment from him because he understands the value that we have right now. He and the world understand that it's the capital value, the financial power, everything is right now being concentrated on this area with everyone coming here to set up businesses. So he understands it. That is why he's being nice and he's coming to get all the deals that he can.
But Majid, like, just, you know, I just have a question. Why are they increasing the amount of orders? You know, what is the why behind all of this?
Again, to appease him so he doesn't slap them with anything else. See, Qatar is a very, like, every Middle Eastern superpower is a very interesting case study in itself. Just to give you perspective and then go to Qatar, Saudi Arabia, very big population, very big area to control, very big promises to fulfill by 2030. They want to literally trade with anyone and everyone right now because they have to reach those targets. So you keep that in mind. So Trump becomes very important because the biggest economy in the world is U.S. economy in terms of GDP. Then you come to UAE, very interesting dynamics again, 10%, 15% of their own people. Then they have 85% residents and people who are not like natural citizens. And then they have to take care of them. They have to keep evolving and keep earning money, make their GDP stronger. Then you have Qatar, which has so much money and only 300 million people. 300,000 people, nearly 350 to 300,000 people. They have such a small number of people to take care of, but they have so much money. So it's they have to do something to keep that money rolling. That's the main point. They have done extraordinary in terms of infrastructure, parks, schools, recreation. They can do literally anything.
Education.
And they still will be left with money. So they want to
invest it. But how would it appease Trump exactly?
Because it's an American company. Boeing, Airbus, American companies. So investing in American company, investing in American businesses, creating more jobs. Because more orders, more production, more manufacturing, and more jobs. So he'll be happy. He can go and say, see, 100 orders, jobs created.
This is a deal that we want to sign with you. I think it's going to be exciting when we hear it.
But Trump's visit, it's going to be historic. Sunday night-ish, we'll start. Yesterday, there was a report. She shared a video of him saying, in the same press conference, where he said that I'll be flying out on Monday night, U.S. Monday night. So he also said that I'm going to make an announcement before I fly, which will be like historic and this and that and blah and blah. I don't know. There's so much leakage in his close people that now AP and Al Jazeera and like 4 or 5 WIP publications have already reported that he is going to recognize the Persian Gulf as the Arabian Gulf now. So U.S. has never recognized it as the Arabian Gulf. They always call it the Persian Gulf. So that is one big news, which was supposed to come out from his mouth before the trip, but it was leaked. It's always like that. Someone tells someone and someone eventually tells someone. And now the Persian Gulf is going to be called Arabian Gulf officially by the U.S. as well.
That is really interesting.
So we'll talk about the importance of why Arabian Gulf and why Persian Gulf tomorrow. It's a very long topic and obviously we also need to be confirmed on a lot of things. It's a very interesting thing. He is, he's not only doing trade, he is also trying to appease people. Like, okay, no Persian Gulf, let's call it Arabian Gulf. So we'll talk about the importance of this
tomorrow. A performer. Yeah. Now, for our third topic for today, in a landmark ruling, Meta has secured a $168 million verdict against Israeli spyware developer NSO Group. Now, the decision delivered by a U.S. federal court in California concludes a 6-year legal battle over NSO's use of its Pegasus spyware to hack into WhatsApp. Now, Meta, which owns WhatsApp, Facebook, and Instagram, accused NSO of targeting 1,400 users, many of them journalists, activists, and human rights defenders.
And the court awarded Meta $444,719, nearly $444,000 in compensation damages and an additional $167.3 million in punitive damages. The case marks one of the most significant legal victories in the fight against commercial spyware and surveillance abuse. Meta alleged that NSO exploited a vulnerability in WhatsApp system to access user phones without consent.
Now, NSO Group has claimed that Pegasus is intended for law enforcement and counterterrorism, but the spyware, according to Reuters, has been linked to high-profile abuses in countries like Mexico and Poland. Now, according to court documents, and NSO charged as much as $7 million to hack just 15 phones for European clients. I think with this point, we're seeing how expensive spyware is.
Yeah.
$7 million to hack 15 phones. That is crazy.
And the case also revealed the scale of NSO's operations. Its research team reportedly includes 140 personnel with an annual budget of $50 million devoted to identifying mobile phone vulnerabilities. The court noted that NSO had defied multiple disclosure orders raising concerns about transparency and accountability.
Now, legal experts say the ruling sets a powerful precedent in holding spyware vendors accountable for abuses, with surveillance tools under growing scrutiny worldwide. This judgment could reshape how courts view private firms operating in the cyber espionage industry. Now, according to Reuters, Majid, they also did include that NSO group, which is in charge of the Pegasus spyware, they did not actually want to give in the evidence. They did not include all the evidence that they could. But for me, I think what really stood out to me, and I believe it stood out to you too, it's the fact that NSO group is not just one of the best Israeli spyware firms in Israel, it's one of the best spyware firms in the world. And I think it's interesting because we're starting to see this trend where there's a lot of spyware firms that are evolving in Israel. You know, it's not just NSO Group. It's also the group that I believe is called Wiz. Now, just a while ago, Google acquired Wiz for more than $30 billion, I believe. It was one of the biggest acquisitions that ever happened in Israel. Now, the group Wiz, previously, Google tried to buy them out for $23 billion, but I believe that they refused, and they were later bought this year for $32 billion. So I think it's interesting that we're seeing that evolving trend of a lot of spyware firms, artificial intelligence firms that are evolving in Israel.
And it's actually not a secret anymore. It was rumor back in the day, like at least 10, 15 years ago, that they're the best at cybersecurity and espionage through cyber setups. But now, since they've started marketing their products, and Google, the example that you give, is the most potent example right now, because Google buying an Israeli, apparently they're not a spyware firm, they are a data cloud security firm, but actually what their products are, they help you in spy espionage and cyber attacks and whatnot. The main technicality was in all of this that Meta put the cases that there was a bug in WhatsApp. So to an extent, I still think it's Meta problem as well, that if you had a bug and you didn't know about it, and you've built the software, it's your problem
but
also.
But you know, Majid, it was a six-year battle in court.
So
six
eventually
years.
They won, but I don't think even, we saw the amount, 7 million for 15 users only to hack 15 phones. Imagine the money this company has made. So this is like not even a dent in their finances. They'll happily pay it and just come out. I think the biggest problem for them would be the legal repercussions, not the monetary repercussions, that this case will now set a precedent, and anyone who thinks they've worked with Pegasus or were hacked by Pegasus, they can go to the court, tell there is a precedent already set that these guys do this and win cases against them. So apparently I was reading yesterday, but I couldn't read the whole article. Too excited yesterday. Got my license, so yeah. But I will find that article. There is a local Middle Eastern startup as well, which is taking over. I remember the number in the shoulder of the story that they did 150 million in sales. So there is a very nice Middle Eastern startup.
It's a spyware firm?
They don't call themselves spywares. No one calls themselves spywares. They all call it security, cyber security, cloud security. They give it a name, which is a very nice name. But again, see, there is ethical hacking. There is ethical cyber security. There is ethical firms. So it's good that someone else is growing up from this place. The name starts with P. I completely forgot it because, again, I wasn't focusing. I just read it and I was like, okay, I'll bookmark it and read it later. But again...
is it Paramount?
I think, yes, it's Paramount, right? You found it?
Yeah.
They did, they're doing good in the industry in the local area. And most probably we'll see not just one, but a lot of companies in this space, because cybersecurity is one of the biggest issues as we move towards digital. Everything is literally digital now. The 2 days ago, we talked about money flows, right?
Yeah, money flows.
So it's a very conventional system which everyone uses in their countries.
Exactly. They took
with
something so traditional and then they
but
digitalized it.
But they put it on digital, right? So everything is being so digitized that cybersecurity becomes one of the most important aspects in it.
Oh, my God. Magic, you know what I actually noticed? I just remembered this. You know Kumera?
The startup?
No. Kumera. It's like Botim, but better.
Oh, okay. No, I'm...
I love Botum, but I also, Botum is like for my mom and the grannies. That's why I use it. Yeah, it's easier because they love it.
Yeah.
But Comera, I've been using it for a while and I noticed something. Basically, I was on a video call with someone and I came to make a bank transaction. And when I came to make the transaction while I was on the call, Comera warned me and said, hey, warning, you should not, I ignored the warning. I'm like, it's okay. They're not robbing me. There aren't millions to rob here.
Yeah.
It's fine. You know what I mean? It's fine. It's a prepaid card. I won't be robbed badly. So I didn't care about it. I ignored it. But I think that's so interesting that they warned me. It's like, who is watching? George Orwell was right.
Someone is watching.
He honestly, someone is always watching.
There's this, just before we move on to the story, this is a discussion I had with one of my friends. He works for a company who do sustainability setup for any building.
What is it called?
Company name is very interesting. Just give me 1 second. As soon as I start talking about it, I'll remember it. But what they do is basically when you're building a anything, complex building, anything, they give you the sustainability certificates and they help you with soundproofing and all that. As soon as this company, he started working with that company, so we had chats about smart buildings. And smart buildings are very IoT-based, internet over things. So all these things are digitized. So literally, with cyber, if you don't have a good cybersecurity for your smart building as well, you can get hacked. Your whole building, the lights, everything can be controlled by someone. So cybersecurity, we don't emphasize on it that much. We don't even talk about it a lot on the show. But cybersecurity is one of the biggest industries that's silently growing on the side as everything is going digital. So yeah, this story is very important from that perspective. That be careful.
I just got goosebumps. I did.
Yeah, whatever you're doing, be careful.
Definitely.
On your digital platforms.
You have to be careful. And finally, for our last topic of the day, to end it on a very inspiring note, two of the UAE's most prominent tech startups, fintech firm Tabby and cloud kitchen operator Kitopi, are preparing for public listings, but say challenges still remain. Now, speaking at the Capital Markets Summit in Dubai this week, the companies highlighted issues around investor access and the impact of oil-linked regional volatility.
And Tabby, founded in 2019 and last valued at $3.3 billion, is targeting a 2026 IPO next year. Kitopi, launched in 2018, says it may go public within 2 to 3 years if macroeconomic conditions remain strong, but both companies raised concerns that global investors are struggling to access IPOs in the Gulf due to limited allocation.
Now, Tabby CEO Hussam Arab warned that international investors are losing interest, and he quote-unquote said, they do the work, they're sold on the market, and then they get a sliver of supply, he said. Now, he also flagged broader recession risks and the impact on consumer credit performance.
Kitopi CEO Mohammed Balut echoed these sentiments, citing oil price volatility as a potential delay factor. If the oil price changes and things don't perform well, this was a good opportunity to double down and do more. That's what Balut said. Brent crude is currently trading at a 4-year low.
Now, Tabby serves over 14 million users across 4 MENA markets and partners with over 40,000 merchants. Kitopi is a pioneer of the kitchen-as-a-service model, running over 200 kitchens and works with top brands like McDonald's. Both firms aim to test whether the Gulf's tech sector is ready for global investor appetite, or still held back by structural limitations. Now, when I take a look at this story, Majid, the reason why I said it's so inspiring is because think of it like this. Hussam Arab is a Saudi Arabian. He founded Tabby in the UAE, in Dubai, in 2019. Tabby reached unicorn status after 4 years of founding with a $200 million Series D round. When do you hear of that every single day? You don't.
Yeah.
Where after 4 years, a company is hailed as a unicorn. You know, I remember when I was watching this video of venture capitalist Noor Suede speaking, one of the first women in the Middle East to launch an IPO. She was saying that one of her favorite projects, people that her company invested in, was Tabby. It was in Hussam Arab. She said that he was great to work with. I think it's such an inspiring story because they scaled so quickly and they succeeded so quickly, and it's almost this. There's so much cultural significance here. A Saudi Arabian bringing a unicorn, launching it in the UAE, and then expanding it across the Gulf.
Yeah. The good thing about all these initial founders that I see who started these things like 6, 10 years ago, Balut, Hussam Arab, the swivel guy, forgot his name. I sent you the video in the morning with him, his interview with Taufik Krede. Mustafa, the founder of Swivel. All these people, there's a very widely shared criticism on them. That they all copied an idea from the West and they just brought it here. So they didn't make something new. And what I always think of that is they did copy an idea. It's not bad. Facebook copied hundreds of ideas of other apps. Everyone does that. In a big industry, if you make something which works, always people will copy the idea and give it their own USP.
Instagram gave us those reels to copy.
Is there
TikTok.
Because of X and X founder who sold it to Elon Musk, made Blue Sky. So everyone is copying each other's idea. That's not the problem. The good thing that you should acknowledge is that they brought those ideas, localized them. That was the biggest achievement that I saw in all these founders. They didn't just copy paste the idea like, okay, this, let's bring it here. Buses, let's bring Swivel buses here. And they localized it so much, and all their problems originated from their personal experiences. Mustafa Swivel had to find a ride, and in Egypt's busy streets, it's very difficult to hail a taxi and all that. It was like, okay, a lot of people need this. Personal experience, grew an idea. Tabby, Hussam wanted to split payments but didn't want to pay interest because he's a Muslim, and a lot of Muslims don't like interest. He's like, okay, interest-free, Sharia-compliant payments. So all these people, they should be acknowledged for localizing those products. Obviously, they copied the idea. No one is denying it. But focusing on that is wrong. And their success actually speaks about it, that they didn't just copy it. If they would have just copied it, no one would use their services. Everyone would still be using the Western services. Like PayPal recently came, and we already have so many local payment systems.
Do you have examples, Magic?
Zina is one of the...
Where is it based?
It's in UAE. They just launched their tap payment. So Zina is one of the payment gateways and startups. And then we have government level, and then banks already are so nicely connected in the UAE that you don't need anyone. So a lot of these big players, they are coming here, but they know that there is local players who have some share of the market. So either they'll come and do M&As, like mergers and acquisitions, and that way our locally grown startups will exit on a very high 10x note.
I don't agree with that idea of, like, you know, they copied them. Because if you look at mankind itself, any idea that anybody has ever come up with, somebody else has been thinking about or has been in the process of doing. It's just how well you launched something, how well you marketed it, and the level of discipline that you put into it. I remember I heard... there's this saying, Majid, on TikTok that a lot of people from Gen Z use whenever they see something, and it's like, oh my God, do I not have one original experience on this earth? Seriously, we all share that, like, collective conscience. Yeah. So I don't agree with that fact of copying. We needed it. So
I think, even if you... I don't remember the author. I don't know. I'm so bad with names sometimes. There's this book... which I read, and it had a very crazy idea, and I loved it, and I thought that someday, if I want to start something, if I want to start a business or anything, I will do this exactly. And the whole crux of the suggestion was, never start something new if you want to be rich quickly or you want to be successful quickly. Because if you start a new thing, if you break the market with some new innovation, it will take you a lot of time to just take it to people and make them understand. The best idea is take any product which is doing great in the market.
You're right.
Make a copy and don't just copy paste it. Innovate it in your own way. So Tabby, there's broken payments, like breakups of payments already in the US, in Europe. And they've been there for like 10, 15 years, 20 years now. But he brought it here, and his innovation was Sharia compliant. And no interest. So he gave it his twist. So they didn't just copy-paste it. They innovated it for the region. So it's a very nice idea. And I think, Tabby, someday if it expands to US and Europe, the Muslims would love to use it. Because, again, Sharia compliant and interest-free.
And
so, very nice idea.
It is. And you know, Majid, like just on that quote that you just brought up, I've heard it before too.
Yeah, right?
I think, you know, this was something that I've been told before by a mentor that I've had, a teacher, who told me that, you know, in life, you do not need to always take the back door of the house. You can just go through the front door. You know, we don't need to overcomplicate things to achieve success. Sometimes following the simplest routes are truly the best routes. And I just want to wrap that up for you guys. Thank you for tuning into the Smashy Business Show. Make sure to follow us across all social media channels at Smashy Business and stay ahead with our daily newsletter. You'll find the subscription link in the description.
This has been a Smashy Business Show, a Smashy Business production, part of the Augustus Media Podcast Network. A big shout out to our 1.6 million monthly listeners across all platforms. Thank you for making this possible. And if you're one of them, we appreciate you. Have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow.